All right, we're calling this the measure of a man. We're attempting to measure ourselves as men according to the characteristics the Apostle Paul listed for mature spiritual men. We first saw that you were to be blameless, and we compared it to getting a background check. It's a summary characteristic that says there is no glaring problem or inconsistency in your life. The second characteristic is that you be the husband of one wife. 1 Timothy 3:2. You can just kind of hang out there. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife. Same thing in Titus 1:5 and 6, where Paul wrote and he said, I left you in Crete that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife. It's always seemed an odd way of wording things. Its literal rendering is even more odd. It really reads a one-woman man. Maybe it would help to know that in the Roman culture of the first century, it was not uncommon to be a three-woman man, and this is the background. One of the women would be your legal wife with whom you had children. A second woman might be a slave with whom you had sex. A third woman might be a prostitute that you visited down at the pagan temple, and this was their society. Seems strange to us because we have been influenced by Hebrew and Christian morality. But in the first century, this was the norm. You see, our culture is getting to be weirder and weirder all the time, you know, when it comes to, we still think in terms of the Judeo-Christian kind of morality, but if you look outside and see what's happening in our world, it's kind of an anything goes thing. And so, this was the Roman culture of the first century. And so the issue Paul is addressing here is much broader than whether or not you are married. We have a tendency to read this in terms of just, hey, you know, a leader needs to be a married guy that loves his wife. But he wasn't really referring to marital status at all. He was referring to moral purity with regards to sexual behavior. Before we move on, let's clear up two common misconceptions with regards to leaders in the church. Because even though we're not specifically focusing on leaders, that's the context of these verses. There are some who say this verse forbids remarriage after the death of a spouse. It doesn't. The Bible permits and honors second marriages under the proper circumstances. And there are some who say this qualification automatically disqualifies divorced men from positions of leadership. It doesn't, because remember, Paul is not referring to marital status. There are biblical grounds for divorce that would not disqualify a divorced man. The times Paul wrote in were wicked. The believers in these two churches at Ephesus and Crete were mostly Gentile. The men were used to very loose morals with regards to sexual behavior. So it was important to establish that leaders especially needed to adopt biblical morality and practice sexual purity. It seems that sexual sin is a favorite device of Satan's to overthrow the leaders in God's church. All of us could name famous or even local pastors or elders whose ministries have been destroyed because of sexual sin. As with all these characteristics, what is imperative for leaders is also essential for any Christian man who wishes to be godly. In Paul's day, you couldn't say that because you were not interested in being an elder, therefore you could remain a two or three woman man. No, every Christian man is to be a one woman man. And so this suggests to us two lines of thought. One is the avoidance of sexual sin, but the other would be the advancement of your marriage. Sex, using the term broadly, is getting tougher to avoid. On the Tube, a 2007 study by Reuters found that the supposed family TV hour between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. is, quote, sexier and deadlier than ever. One network, Fox, was tagged as having nearly 21 incidents of violent, sexual, or profane content per hour, and I assume that is programming. If you add in commercials, it's got to be a lot worse. Yeah, that was just the opening of The Simpsons, you know, so... On the net, I'll just read some of this. You guys know this stuff. Worldwide pornography revenue in 2006 was $97 billion. Of that, $13 billion was in the United States. Every second, over $3,000 is spent on pornography. 28,000 Internet viewers are viewing pornography. 372 Internet users are typing adult search terms. And every 39 minutes, a new pornographic video is made. 12% of all websites are pornographic. There are 4.2 million pornographic websites, 420 million pornographic web pages, and 68 million daily pornographic search engine requests, 25% of search engine requests. 79% of youth have unwanted exposure to pornography, and it occurs in the home. In its first analysis of online media, the Parents Television Council, PTC, found that extremely graphic content and harsh profanity are just a click away for kids entering seemingly innocent research terms on YouTube, the most popular destination for online video that has undertaken several policies to control inappropriate content. The PTC's latest study, the New Tube, not only analyzes content in 280 of the most popular YouTube videos between March and October 2008, but it also takes into account the text, commentary, and advertisements that are available alongside the videos. So if statistics are any indication, we're not doing very well as Christian men at avoiding sexual sin. I cited a poll recently that indicated 50% of Christian men admitted to not just viewing pornography on the internet, but having what they termed an addiction. So no matter how you interpret this research, I can tell you from my own pastoring that it's a huge problem. If you or someone you know is struggling with sexual sin, here are a few suggestions. Admit that it is sin, confess it to God, and repent. Become accountable. That could mean that you admit you have sinned to someone and ask them to hold you accountable. Or it could mean you make yourself passively accountable by setting up a system by which you make it harder and harder to sin. Cancel premium viewing channels. Cancel cable TV if you have to. Only use your computer when your wife is there and do it in plain sight. Things like that. Make it hard for you to sin. Satan is working hard to tempt you. You should work harder to foil him. Don't expose yourself to the sources of soft porn like certain television shows and movies or magazines. If you absolutely cannot stop, then you are going to need intervention. You need counseling or maybe even a program. It's that serious. Remember, you are dead to sin and alive to God. Don't yield your members then to sexual sin. Biblical morality extends beyond the physical. You remember Jesus said in Matthew 5:27-8, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Looking at a woman to lust for her is different from simply being tempted. It is dwelling upon the temptation. It is acting upon it mentally. We can't totally avoid temptation, but we can refuse to lust. Here's some encouragement. 1 Thessalonians 4:4-5. "Each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God." And so that's a kind of a good, ties everything together that we're talking about, because Paul was writing to these former Gentiles. He says, hey, when you were a Gentile, you didn't know God. You had no sense of even needing to control your lust. Society was all over it, you know. But he says here, your own vessel, which is a reference to your own body, the vessel by which you enjoy the world and interface with the world. Paul tells you that as a Christian, you can exercise restraint and self-control over those drives. You need not surrender to the passion of lust. Remember also that God's commands are his enablings. And so, guys that are involved in pornography, they just need to stop. And if they can't stop, they need to figure out how to, cut off the hand or pluck out the eye, as it were, and just not get on the computer. I remember years ago when Calvary Costa Mesa had some suggestions on their website about, how to avoid internet pornography and this and that and the other thing, and filters, filters, they just can't filter everything out, because you'd have to physically look at every website and then decide if it's got any pornographic content and then list that particular address. I mean, it just can't help that much. And then at the end they said, bottom line is, if this is going to be a problem for you, just don't go online. I mean, you can live without the internet and stuff. And so I think, I was thinking about this morning, about the accountability. Typically, accountability is me telling Red, hey, I have a drinking problem, can I call you, and, or I'm addicted to internet pornography, and, can we pray together? But there's a passive accountability as well, where you're accountable to yourself in the sense that, hey, I'm just not going to be in a situation where this is even possible. So when I'm tempted, to turn on the TV and see what kind of salacious content is there, I don't have premium movie channels that let that stuff through. Or, like our TV at home, Pam is the only one that knows the code, to certain, you can set it so certain ratings, anything above a certain rating just doesn't come through. Even then, I mean, it's not foolproof. You know, there's always stuff that would be considered pornographic coming through on the TV, and so you're just going to have to figure all that out somehow, you know, if this is a problem, and I think we just need to take it seriously. 50% of Christian men is big. That's a lot. And that's just guys that say they're addicted, you know. Now, even if you, like I said on Sunday or whenever it was, if you cut that in half or in half again, even 10% is too much. You know, anybody, it's just too much. And so we need to be aware of this and get over that.
What it's then, it's 100%.
That's true, yeah. Now, the other thing you could focus on is the advancement of your marriage. The place to begin with regard to moral purity isn't on a physical level. It is with the spiritual. I remember, and I don't want to get too graphic because Jeremy's here, but David Hocking, for example, in his commentary on the Song of Solomon, his strategy for dealing with sexual sin is to be with your wife whenever you're tempted. And I'm thinking, that just doesn't work. You know, I mean, that there's no way that's, you know, I mean, he's kind of over the top and stuff. So I'm thinking, but the place and the natural thing is to think, well, if I have sexual temptation, I need to have sexual release. So, but really the place to begin is on a spiritual level. It's not on the physical. You'll never satisfy, you can never totally satisfy the physical. I mean, that's a problem. So you start on a spiritual level. And, you know, because after all, when you got married, you made spiritual promises. You promised to remain faithful no matter what. You committed to sexual purity as a voluntary act of your will. Forget the physical and concentrate on loving your wife the way Jesus loved the church. Love her sacrificially and generously and redemptively. Concentrate on nourishing and cherishing and forgiving and cleansing and sanctifying her. And you'll find yourself advancing your marriage and avoiding sexual sin.